welcome to the Nothing But the Truth podcast. We are your hosts,
Kelly Richmond Pope
and Tim Edson. In any industry, there can be many forms of fraud, corruption, and whistleblowers, the violator and the violated, the guilty and the innocent. On this podcast, we want you to hear the truth where you might find yourself experiencing different feelings and emotions towards these stories that fall on either side of the line, or maybe even on the line. We'll be bringing you a variety of stories told directly from the sources, whether they committed the fraud, were forced to commit the fraud, and even those who blew the whistle on their employers that were wrongfully accused. So, Kelly, we're back for another episode this week, and why don't we tell our listeners what we have in store for them?
Well, this week, another adventure. So, as you know, we worked on All the Queen's Horses together, and that's the great documentary about the largest municipal fraud in U.S. history. And the film was accepted to the Fraud Film Festival in Amsterdam. And it's a really neat place where all these fraud films are being shown. And one of the films that was shown was Citizen Four. And after the film was shown, there was a Q&A with the FBI agent that led the Snowden investigation. And I thought, wow, it'd be great to talk to him. Because I often, when I'm teaching my classes, I always ask my students, tell me who you think a whistleblower is. And often they all say Snowden. So this, I felt like this was my chance to finally ask someone about Snowden who has like inside information about Snowden. So I asked Lou if he would do an interview, and here we are.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to hear what he's got to say about this as a former FBI investigator.
You know, it's funny. It's interesting because, you know, what do you think about Snowden? When all this was going on, what did you think about him? Like, what was your first reaction when you heard about what he did? Did you think he was a hero, or did you think he was a traitor? What did you think?
I guess I didn't really know what to think of him at first, because when I first heard about him leaking anything, I wanted to have some time to research what he was leaking and figure out more about him, because I didn't really know anything about him. So
as you started reading about him, what'd you think? Like, what was your gut reaction?
It was pretty astounding. I mean, because I didn't know anything about the NSA before. And then with him coming out with these leaks, talking about what the actual, in more detail, what the surveillance programs were and everything that, and, you know, the different behind the scenes kind of, activities that they were conducting kind of gave me a new perspective of the NSA itself.
Well, I think it'd be interesting to hear from the inside someone who was leading this investigation. And then, so after you take a listen, let's regroup and let's see what you think.
All right. Sounds good. And now here's the interview of Kelly and former FBI agent Lou Bidell.
My name is Lou Bidell. I'm a retired FBI special agent in charge. I joined the FBI. Well, I actually got in federal law enforcement right out of college, went to Illinois State University, graduated with a degree in criminal justice, and started with the U.S. Marshals Service in Virginia in 1989, worked there for a year, then joined the NCIS, the Naval Criminal Investigative Service. When I was there, it was called the Naval Investigative Service. I was in Chicago for that. There's a base in North Chicago, Illinois, and I worked violent crime, major offender type cases up there, violent crime, drugs, for 5 years from 91 until 96. In 96, I joined the FBI. After completing Quantico, I went to New York City as a new agent. Worked on after going through the new agent rotation, which is surveillance, you know, background checks, that kind of stuff, I ended up on a counterintelligence squad where I stayed until 2002. At the time in New York, it was the beginning of the terrorism type problems in the States. So I worked TWA 800, Egypt Air. I went to Guam to interview a bunch of Kurdish refugees after the second Iraq War. I went to Kenya for the embassy bombings, which was fascinating. And then in 02, well, after 9/11 obviously was very impactful on my life. You know, I was living in Manhattan, I have two young children at the time, and after 9/11, I stayed in New York City until March of 2002, where I went to D.C., and then I took various leadership positions throughout the FBI. We have a Washington Field Division where I was a squad supervisor, an assistant special agent in charge. At our headquarters, I was what was called a supervisory special agent, a unit chief, and a section chief. And the last job I had in the FBI, I led one of our divisions in Manhattan. I was a special agent in charge of our counterintelligence division.
So you ran the espionage program, and one of the cases was the Edward Snowden case.
Yeah, so in June of 2013 is when Snowden left NSA and went to Hong Kong, and that's when the FBI got involved in a case when NSA, when the first document was published. It was a top secret slide off of what's called, it was off of a PRISM slide deck. PRISM was a kind of a how-to NSA does stuff, and one of the slides from their deck ended up on the front page of The Guardian.
So when something like that happens, I'm assuming you get a call and everyone gets in gear to start this investigation.
Yeah, so the FBI is responsible for all significant media leak cases as well as all espionage cases. Media leaks are unique in the fact that if we have a media leak, then we refer that to DOJ, and DOJ has to approve us looking at it as a criminal matter. Snowden case was like that. And so yeah, I got a call from NSA, their head of security, after the first document was in The Guardian saying we have a problem. Of course, my response was, yes, you do, and then how can we help you? And initially, there was about 30,000 people that had access to the information that had been released. Our initial reaction was we have to have a tighter number, a smaller number than that, before we can pursue it. And we were able to whittle it down to about a dozen within the first day or so. And then after that first day, we got it down to about three. And then after that, we were pretty sure it was Snowden. We knew before he came on TV, I want to say it was June 9th, maybe 6th or 9th, but we knew it was him right before that.
So one of the things that I often talk about with my students when I'm talking about whistleblowers, Snowden's name always comes up as, Professor Pope, is he a whistleblower? And I always struggle with, is he or is he not? How would you define his role as either yes, he is a whistleblower, or no, he's not a whistleblower?
Well, I'll start with the definition of a whistleblower. So a whistleblower is somebody who sees an activity that they don't agree with and they think it's illegal, all right? And so when they see that activity, then they raise it to their supervisor, or they go some way through their chain of command or through another agency in government, an inspector general, Congress, whatever they want to do, to raise the red flag that, hey, there's something wrong. Is Snowden a whistleblower? No. Snowden took information and released it to the media. So I would say Snowden's more of a thief or a classified information mishandler. He's just not.
I'm sure you speak all around to colleges, graduate students. Do you have this experience where they think he is a whistleblower?
Yeah, I mean, many people, you know, that we at this film festival, Professor Pope and I were at, is everyone kept defining him as a whistleblower, as well as the Citizen Four documentary from Laura Poitras. Is he a whistleblower? And they refer to him as a whistleblower. He's simply not. I mean, you know, he never made, you know, when we did the investigation, we interviewed everybody, his entire chain of command, every one of his coworkers, every one of his coworkers from the CIA, every coworker he ever been around, his neighbors, family, friends, everything. And he never raised any concerns to anyone until he, you know, downloaded the information to the media. And so it's just a wrong use of the term. I mean, it's, you know, he's a thief. I mean, he stole the information. Yes, he did it for what he thinks was honorable reasons, but the reality is he had much more appropriate avenues to pursue. And I know a lot of people don't like to hear that, but the answer is, had he gone to Congress, had he gone through his chain of command, you know, had he gone to the Inspector General of the NSA, there are so many other avenues he could have released that. The other problem with it, everything that he had a problem with was all legal. So everything that NSA was doing was approved. It was approved by Congress when they voted for the Patriot Act and the various, you know, iterations of it as it went along the line. And so Yeah, he didn't like it, but it wasn't really the appropriate venue. The cause of what he did, or the, I guess the reaction of what he did, you could argue that that was a, it was a good thing. I mean, I wouldn't argue against that. He certainly got the debate started on, was NSA monitoring too much? But how he got there was illegal.
And that's interesting, because I think the way I try to describe it with my students is, I think about if you were a Secret Service agent assigned to guard a president, your job is to guard the president, regardless of who's in office or what their political affiliation is. Your job is to guard the president. So I try to use that analogy when thinking about Snowden. Snowden's job was to perform a duty for the NSA.
Yes, Snowden's job in the NSA was a systems administrator. So his job was to keep their computers online. It's just that simple. And so he may not have liked what NSA was doing, but his recourse is not to accumulate their secret information or classified information and release it. I mean, he could have quit. He could have done lots of different things. But yeah, he certainly is not. And the Secret Service analogy is great. If you don't like the president and therefore you will not protect him, then you need to find another role. And I'm sure that happens. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, but you have to be comfortable with what you're doing. Our system, you know, isn't going to change if you don't like the president. You know, he was elected. She was elected. Whoever was elected, it doesn't matter. But it's not somebody's role in that level to do it.
So with the documentary, I think that it builds a story of Snowden being a hero. And I think when younger people watch it, they rally behind him as he did the right thing. And so I really want our time together for you to make sure whoever listens to this, that they have the direct course of action as to what you are supposed to do or what you're not supposed to do. So I want to talk about some truths and maybe some not so much truths in the film. And I know you probably have them in your mind about how they portray certain scenes. So can you just pull a couple up?
Yeah, there's a couple scenes where they describe, you know, Snowden says something about there's some white construction vans outside of my house. You know, I hope my girlfriend doesn't get arrested, or I hope this is, you know, I'm not going to be arrested. You know, the FBI is going to come surveil me in Hong Kong, or there's the FBI surveilling the filmmaker in Hong Kong. We weren't surveilling anybody in Hong Kong. It's not the FBI's role. And so I don't doubt that they were under surveillance. I'm sure they were under surveillance by the MSS, which is the Ministry of State Security. People jump to the conclusions that, you know, when there's a manhunt or there's an investigation going on, they overestimate the powers of the FBI or any other agency. Yes, we were trying to get Snowden. There's no doubt. We were negotiating with the Hong Kong authorities on his return. We canceled his visa. And the reason why we did that, or canceled his passport, the reason why we did that under international law, you're supposed to be returned to wherever you came from, meaning Hawaii, and we wanted to arrest him. He was charged with two felonies, legitimately, for stealing information and misusing a computer. He was not charged with espionage. That's another myth in the movie. The reason why he wasn't charged with espionage is most countries won't extradite somebody for that. And so we picked the charges that we charged him with. We could have superseded the indictment. I don't know that we could have proven espionage at the end of the day. We could certainly prove felony mishandling of classified information and then the misuse of the computer and whatever, which would have been more than enough to get him extradited. So there's lots of different – I mean, the movie is presented in a very – pro-Snowden manner. My job wasn't to say I agreed with Snowden or I didn't agree with him. My job was to say, hey, did this guy commit a crime? Can we investigate it and can we prove it? And that was really the role of the FBI.
Can you define espionage?
Yeah, it's taking classified information and giving it to a foreign government. That was very quick. And so for him, there's also mishandling. And so mishandling is when you – we didn't charge him with mishandling because that's also can be viewed as a political crime. So for him, the fact that he gave information to the media without any authorization, it's simply a crime. You know.
So in the movie, there was a scene with Clapper talking.
Yeah.
And there was a question posed to him, and I believe it was a yes or no question, and he responded by saying, not wittingly.
Yeah, so his question was, does NSA collect information on U.S. people? And his answer was, no, not wittingly. The problem of the answer, you have to go back to the question. So the question, I don't remember what congressman it was, but he basically says, in yes or no format, because we're in a hurry, is the NSA collecting information on U.S. citizens? And so Clapper's answer is no, comma, not wittingly. The problem, of course, NSA is collecting information on U.S. people, but they're not doing it systematically. They're doing it after there's been a warrant presented. If that U.S. person's in touch with a terrorism person in, you know, the Middle East somewhere, there's going to be a case. It's going to be there's going to be information that's going to be going from the NSA to the FBI. All of it approved by a warrant. It's not a random, huge program to get everyone's information. It's just not how it works. I mean, you know, for a U.S. person to have for the FBI to get any information on somebody, there's going to be a warrant in place. And then the other thing too, in the film implies that it's the voice recordings, the email content. The first step when you are investigating somebody, it's going to be the who's calling whom information. You know, if I call somebody, that'll be the numbers that were called, and they're used to link. Can you determine there's a link between a couple people of interest? It's not going to be the text of it, certainly.
Can you describe the Patriot Act and why it's important and when it came to existence?
After 9/11, the United States was victimized. I'm sure many of your students, they were alive, but barely, in 9/11. So after 9/11, there was a problem that the law enforcement and intelligence agencies weren't communicating together. And so the theory was that, these 19 or 21 terrorists were able to, come into the States. The FBI wasn't aware of them. The CIA was aware of them but didn't tell the FBI. There was all this miscommunication. And the goal was to break down the barriers between agencies that were set up for a reason to keep law enforcement relatively weak to make sure we didn't infringe or didn't pursue, people that we shouldn't. Agreed. I think that's a good thing. The Patriot Act was designed to make it easier to communicate between agencies and make it easier to ask for phone bills or phone information from different phone companies. And so it was enacted by Congress, when Congress approves a law, it gives the FBI the authority to, use that law to pursue people of interest.
The documentary also talks about this idea of a secret court.
Yeah, it's not a secret court. It's a FISA court, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA. That's what it stands for. And I've been to FISA court. You go when you want to get a wire to monitor a person of interest, generally somebody overseas, you go to that court and present your case on why it matters. And so it's certainly not a rubber stamp. It's like any other court. The secrecy of it is because you want to make sure if you're going to go to the court and ask to, wire a KGB SVR officer's phone, that they can't hear that they're under surveillance, so they're going to be targeted. And so that's the roots of it, and that's the court that approves, the wiretaps.
Were you surprised that the movie did as well as it did?
No, I'm not surprised. I think it's a great movie. I mean, there's lots of inaccuracies from my perspective, but, he's an interesting story. He's a guy who, did what he did. I mean, you can't argue... I argue how he did it, but he certainly thought that NSA was doing too much, and I think it's entertaining. I also think that people have to take a breath when they watch that and understand somebody at that level making U.S. foreign policy decisions is probably not how we want to run a government. And so, my job in the FBI wasn't to make a political decision on he was right or wrong. My job was to investigate the case. And my job is not to investigate for a prosecution. My job is to investigate for a fact. Yes, did he do this, or no, he did not. It's funny. In law enforcement, people think that the cops are there to get you guilty or get you. It doesn't work that way. The police, the FBI, their job is to find out what happened. Whatever. And if, as an agent, you of course think if the person did something wrong, you want to catch them, and therefore you want to build a good case. But we're not paid more to find somebody guilty. I mean, and our job is not to find guilt; it's just to find out what happened and then go to a court and let the jury decide or the judge decide if this is a violation of law, yes or no.
So ultimately, what will happen, or do you think will happen to Snowden?
You know, I'll just use an example. There was a CIA spy in the mid-80s. His name was Edward Lee Howard. He was a CIA case officer. He volunteered to the Russians and gave them numerous identities of different CIA case officers around the world. They're non-official cover people is what it was, I think. He went to Russia. He emigrated or defected to Russia, and ultimately that's where he died. And then after his death, his ashes were sent back to the States in a box. And the Russians said he fell down the stairs. So I don't know what happened to him there. My guess would be Snowden won't leave Russia. The Russians won't want him to come back to the States because they won't want to look weak in our eyes or in their own eyes or ours. My guess is he'll stay. The irony of the Snowden investigation or incident is that he felt that he was part of a country or culture that was monitoring too many people too often. Well, he went to the most restrictive government there is, and to where the emails are monitored, the phones are monitored, and where the states, you know, yeah, maybe some of the information may be collected, but it's only monitored if there's a court order to monitor it. And so it's a big difference. And I think people mistake the collection of information versus the processing of information. And it is a much different thing.
Can he live, or does he live just a regular, normal life, free to move about because he's not here and there?
Yeah, I think he has a very typical Russian life. Is he under any certain protocols? I'm sure the government keeps a pretty good eye on him. But I think he's probably has a relatively free life. Yeah.
And if he steps foot on U.S. soil, he will be arrested? Is that how it works?
Assuming the indictments are still intact, which I'm sure they are, absolutely. Or a friendly foreign government soil.
So the word to students, young professionals, is if you work for an organization that you do not agree with, don't take the information and try to, especially if it's highly classified, don't take the information into your own hands and try to handle a situation on your own.
Yeah, I would, if it's classified, I would certainly not recommend taking it without authorization. If you're working for a company and you have access to proprietary or embarrassing information for a company, go to your bosses or quit. It's a much easier way about life. You can make a stand if you want to have a position about it. There's nothing wrong with that, but I would do it through the more appropriate protocols.
As I watched that documentary, I just had to believe that Snowden didn't believe things would get as bad as it did. I really, and I see that with just students. I think that they don't believe that it could escalate to how it escalated.
Yeah, I think he underestimated our response. If there's any video that you need to see regarding Snowden, there's a John Oliver interview of Snowden that went on a couple years ago, and it's one of the best interviews of him for a couple of reasons. The number one, though, is that Oliver is talking to Snowden, and he basically says, "You didn't really plan this through, did you?" And Snowden's response was kind of laughing. He didn't, and I think that he thought he could release this information and then be welcomed back to the States as a hero. The reality is the information that he released was very damaging to the U.S., and it goes back to the argument. I understand his concerns, I understand his issues with NSA, but it's not his role to raise it in that manner. If you want to raise it, fine, do it, but do it through a whistleblower avenue versus running to the media. And once that happens, you set into motion the entire FBI looking for you, the entire judicial system trying to negotiate your return, and it becomes not about you very quickly. It becomes about the act that you had done, or we thought you did. And so and the other thing people have to understand is investigations aren't personal. It's not, I don't have personal animosity towards Snowden, it had nothing to do with it. But I don't think that what he did was right, and I'm certain it wasn't legal. And so because of what he did, the entire investigative apparatus of the U.S. government seeking them out.
That's just an important message, because I have been in so many class discussions where, and I'm, my class environment, they, most of them have work experience. It's an urban area because it's Chicago, but they think he did the right thing. They say, I would do what he did. And so when I saw you and learned what you were talking about, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you is just to get that message out. Like, you need to understand the inside pieces of this case, so that you don't think that you want to go and try something like this or do something like this. Or if you were an intern for Coca-Cola and you had access to the secret recipe,
the formula,
and you found out that there was something highly toxic in the formula, you can't take that and then just call MSNBC and boom, here we have it, because you care about public health. Like, you can't do those things.
Well, you got to think it through too. I mean, so you know, use Snowden as an example. He ran to the media, fine. He gave them all the information, fine. Were they there to help him at the end of the day? No. And so, and they don't have a mechanism to help him. He's a great story for him. He's a great informant. But at the end of the day, they've long since moved on to the next person. And so you have to think that through. And I think, I know when I was a college kid or a young adult, you really think that you're going to make that difference and everyone's going to rally around you. The reality is it's going to be your 15 minutes, and it's going to go over very quickly. And then you're going to be left to pick up the pieces over the years. And, you know, as an adult, as a parent, you would want to think that through, because there's lots of negative things that can occur.
And this is sort of like a train that leaves the station. Like, once it's out, there's nothing really he can do to turn it around. I mean, now he just has to live through whatever the procedure is if he comes back to the United States.
Yeah, it's not going to go away. And people say, well, there's a statute of limitations. Well, there's a statute of limitations on being charged. Snowden was charged, I think it was 12 days after we figured out it was him. So there's no statute of limitations. It's whether, you know, we want to, whether anyone's going to care or not or what. But my guess and my understanding would be, he comes back to the States or any place that would be willing to cooperate with us, he's going to go to trial. And if he can beat it in court, great. But I think it would be pretty hard case to beat.
Interesting. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
I'm glad that there's a truth that comes out that people will learn. So, Tim, you heard the interview. And let's reflect. Okay, did Snowden do the right thing? Yes or no?
Well, I think he did the right thing in the wrong way. Kind of like what the agent was saying. You know, he didn't go through his chain of commands and, you know, check all the way through his, you know, check with any government mm-hmm. agency or whatnot. But, you know, what is the trustworthiness of a chain of command? You know, depending on, you know, who you're working for, what the company is.
Well, but I think it depends on, do you believe that there are measures put in place to protect the citizens of the United States that we don't know about? And so should we have access to everything? I mean, I think we have to accept that there's some level of lack of transparency in order to make the democracy run, which just seems like a contradiction, right? Because you're like, if you're not transparent, then how do we have a democratic society? But there seems to be, to me, there has to be information that's not known to the public in order to protect us. And so I think the analogy that we made in the interview about, you might not like what your company does, but if you sign up to be at that company, you have to do what the job is. If you don't want to do that job, then don't be there. So I think that at your point of, he might have done the right thing, but the wrong way is something really important to think about.
Well, yeah, especially like you go and work for a company, but you don't fully understand what it is they're doing. And then you don't understand it until you get in there. And then you start actually seeing more and more details.
But I can't imagine that he ever thought that this would happen. Like, I can't imagine that he thought that it would be the United States government versus Snowden. Like, I never want to see my name, like, on a document like that, you know?
Oh, right.
But I understand what you're saying, but you still, when it comes to national security and true confidentiality, I don't know that you should take those types of matters in your own hand to do what you think is right, because you have to think about the bigger picture. And I don't think he did that at all.
Yeah, it seems like he was maybe too quick to go to the journalists and release that way. I don't know what I would do in that situation.
Did you see Citizen Four?
Yeah.
What'd you think about it?
I thought it was awesome.
Did you?
Yeah.
I thought it was very biased towards him, you know, in favor of him.
Oh, right.
And, you know, it's interesting because oftentimes in documentary filmmaking, you just want to present the information and let the viewer sort of judge. But I think it was definitely biased towards he did the right thing. So that's why I was interested at the festival to hear Lou come in and talk about, let me tell you some of the inaccuracies about the film. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Because with what Agent Bidell was saying is, so when it comes to a specific thing like this, especially with a company, I'm wondering what a person is supposed to do, an employee of this company, the proper way of doing something in a government agency, and to have something solved in a positive way, if there is even a possibility.
Well, I think you raise an interesting point, because what it leads you to see is you can't have a difference of opinion, right? So if the mission of your organization is to do something, you best be in line with what that mission is. Otherwise, if you have a difference of opinion, you have to be very careful about how you formulated that opinion. So have you broken any rules or laws to get the information to prove your point? If you have, then you should be careful, because you could go down, like you're saying, like some people who have broken the chain of command. I mean, maybe in their pursuit of information, they violated some type of rule or law in order to do it. And so then the spotlight turned to be on them. So I think you have to be careful.
Right, because it kind of gets me thinking towards the last episode of Bolden, where he was talking about the chain of command, and you know, he had to like skip past a supervisor, and that supervisor ended up taking over the job of somebody that he was somewhat confiding in. And then he knew that his days were numbered. And so it's like, you go through the chain of command and you never know when, you know, personal opinions of that higher position can make decisions based on their own biases.
Okay, so the question of the day, is Snowden a whistleblower or a traitor? Which one? You got to pick. Can't say I don't know. Which one is it? Whistleblower or traitor? You got to pick. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What is he?
I think he's a whistleblower.
I don't think Agent Bidell would agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a whistleblower in some way, I think.
Can you be a whistleblower and break the law at the same time?
Well, apparently it seems like all whistleblowers are criminals, the way they're handled.
There's a court of public opinion. So you think he's a whistleblower. I don't know that I would say he's a whistleblower. I think we have a difference of opinion. I don't think he is.
I don't agree with the exact pathway that he took and with releasing the documents, but...
Because think about it. If he were a true whistleblower, he never tried to report internally. The path for most of defined whistleblower is they try to report internally to a supervisor. They get turned down by someone and then they take it outside. He never did that. So what makes him a whistleblower in your mind? Because he exposed something. But the manner in which he does it is what really makes him a definition of a whistleblower or not.
Yeah, because it's the way I've heard Snowden in different interviews describe it. I think he assumed in his own mind that he couldn't go to these certain paths because there were no protections for a whistleblower in federal agencies and whatnot. So maybe there was an assumption that he had. And so he created his own way to be like, you know what? I'm not going to go to my supervisors.
You make a good point. You said in his own mind, he believed something, but I don't know this for a fact, but I would argue that there is some type of anonymous hotline within the NSA that if you have information reported here, and I think he chose not to do that. Maybe he didn't feel it was safe or would protect him, but it seems like it might have, you know, because the chain of command is very important. So I don't know.
Yeah.
So you think he's a whistleblower? I don't. It'd be interesting to see what viewers think. It'd be interesting to see what listeners think.
Yeah. And, give us some ratings if you don't mind on social media. Send us some feedback.
You love it.
We always appreciate it. And we'll see you next week. Thanks again for listening to Nothing But the Truth.